It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Absolutely, some things are worth fighting for, and you have to fight smart, and that's what we're going to be talking about today. Sandy Rios, with you. Let's just pick on this last 8 years. Were there ever times when you thought you were actually losing your mind? That when you turned on the news and you heard the reports of a growing economy and just a smashing success and higher unemployment rates and, everything was wonderful, did you ever wonder you were losing your mind? When you were told that if you object to gay marriage, to marriage between a man and a man and a woman and a woman, that you are homophobic. Everybody knows that that's wrong. You are the immoral person in this equation. Have you ever thought that when you thought that bathrooms should be designated to men and then to women separately, that when you're called homophobic, that maybe you are homophobic or there's something wrong with you that you... There's something wrong. Everyone knows something that you don't know. Well, it reminds many of us of a movie that came out in 1944. I'm not sure. It was with Ingrid Bergman and Charles Boyer. It was called Gaslight. And as strange as it seems, we're going to talk about that today. Let's listen to the trailer.
It was written 2 days before she was murdered.
Where did you find that?
In this score, she must have left it here. It's written by somebody called Sergius Bauer.
Give it to me.
He said I wasn't any litter. He said I was going out of my mind.
You're not going out of your mind. You're slowly and systematically being driven out of your mind.
But why? Why? Oh, that's wonderful.
And you thought I was being cruel to you. Keeping people away
not
from
cruel.
You. Making you a prisoner.
Oh, you're the kindest man in the world. I'm sorry.
If I were not mad, I could have helped you. Whatever you had done, I could have pitied and protected you. Because I am mad, I hate you. Because I'm mad, I betrayed you. And because I am mad, I'm rejoicing in my heart without a shred of pity, without a shred of regret, watching you go with glory in my heart.
All right. Well, aside from the music and the datedness of it, it is a brilliant movie. I remember seeing it years ago. Ingrid Bergman is a young bride. Her husband, handsome Charles Boyer, enters into some sort of a plot to make her think that she's going crazy. Well, I'll say no more about that because I want our next guest to talk about this because it actually has a name. Stella Morabito has been with me before. I remember Stella first came to my attention when Rush Limbaugh read an article that she had written almost in its entirety on his show, which he never does. It was brilliant. It was about mind manipulation, not gaslighting, but other mind manipulation. And that's how I got acquainted with Stella. She's the senior contributor at The Federalist. Her essays appear all over the place in The Washington Examiner, American Thinker, on and on we could go. She's a former intelligence analyst, and she focused on various aspects of Russian and Soviet politics, including communist media and propaganda. She once herself was very much a central part of the left and then had a total life change. And so she knows what she's talking about when it comes to mind manipulation, and she joins us today. Good morning, Stella.
Well, hi. How are you doing there, Sandy? Thanks so much for the intro.
I'm doing very well, Stella. And you heard my setup. So explain, for people that did not see the movie, what was happening between Charles Boyer and his young wife, Ingrid Bergman?
Well, it was a classic case of what now is just called gaslighting, which is just a form of psychological abuse that's used a lot by sociopaths and narcissists who manipulate people into changing their perception of reality or trying to change their perception of reality. And it's just a, you know, the movie itself, where that last scene, I guess, is where she becomes aware that of the manipulation. And it's a very delicate act, this whole gaslighting thing. You really do need to put people into, get people to think that they are going crazy, or their perception of reality is not what is real. And that is why it is so important for the sociopath to isolate the victim. And one of the things I write about a lot has to do, you know, with social isolation and how social isolation can create a sense of delusion. And that's what propaganda is all about, and that's what that piece you referred to that Rush Limbaugh read was about, was the uses of propaganda to and how it creates almost a mass sense of delusion.
So Stella, like in the case, let's start small here. In the case of this married couple, he is there'll be a reality. Like he accused her of stealing a brooch, and she didn't steal a brooch. She says, "Why would I steal the brooch?" But he manipulates circumstances so
right.
that she begins to wonder, "Well, why?" And no one else is there to talk to her. No one else is there to say, "No, of course you didn't steal that brooch. I saw it on the table and it blah, blah, blah." To bring
right.
reality. He isolates her from other people's thoughts and opinions so that she slowly, and he does it over a course of time, and she slowly begins to think that she's actually going crazy.
Right, right. And there is another scene in there where it's really incredible. Ingrid Bergman she was a fantastic actress. And there is a scene where his watch is missing, and they're at a concert, and trying to listen to the music, and he takes her purse, her little bag, and he pulls the watch out and looks at her like, "Well, see, you know, you took it. Why did you do that?" And I mean, it's and she just loses it and has to leave, and that, you know, that comes from a sense of isolation that he cultivated in her.
All right, so no, go ahead.
No, well, all I always try to say is, you know, I have not seen the movie recently. I did not, you know, sit through it right before, you know, going on this program, but the movie itself. Like you said, start small, start one-on-one. It's a classic case of manipulation, psychological manipulation and abuse, where the idea, it's really a power play on the part of, you know, her husband, who in the story is named Gregory, and she, Paula, is he has an ultimate, you know, he had an ulterior motive in marrying her, but that's, you know, that's the main plot is a mystery where, you know, he marries her because he knew that there was some kind of treasure in that attic, and that's when he's, you know, shuffling around in there looking for it, and the gas lights start to dim, and that's where, you know, he tells her she's imagining that, you know, when of course, you know, she very certainly saw that they were dimming as he was using them.
But her reality is that that's her husband. She loved him. She married him because she loved him, and she trusts him naturally.
That's right.
So she does
right.
not expect to be abused by him in this way. It's just a total
exactly.
shock to her.
Yeah. Trust. The victim trusts the perpetrator.
And so
that gives the perpetrator a whole lot of power.
And so the thing that happened with her, as I recall, is that someone was introduced into the plot who was from outside the picture, and he began to speak truth to her, and that's really what began the whole waking up process, wasn't it?
The police investigator, that's right. And he made it clear that, oh, this is exactly what's been happening. I mean, not in terms of the relationship, but he verified reality. He verified reality to her. And once that happened, you know, that blew the whole lid off of the gaslighting, as I said before, delicate gaslighting attempt by the abusive husband. You know, it's not just something that's used. It's not just a technique used by, you know, abusive husbands and abusive spouses or whatever. But it's also a very typical technique of cult leaders. But, you know, that's getting into a bigger picture there. But this is something that's really fascinated me, is how cults operate in much the same manner. I mean, you'll have a leader who has all of these followers who trust, who have blind trust in the leader, and the leader just spins a new reality. It's a form of sorcery. You know, he just has everybody following the leader, and they'll just walk right off a cliff.
You know, Stella, I was thinking of a positive example of that. I was thinking, as you were talking, remember 76 Trombones and the bandmaster? He spins a total fantasy. It's actually a positive story, but he's a flim-flam man, and he makes people believe, you know, that there are instruments and that he can create a band, and they begin to believe it. So this whole concept is not really new to people. It can't be. If they think about it enough, they probably either experienced it or they have seen it. You know, I guess it would happen also with hostages, like that the syndrome where you start identifying with your captor. You know what I'm talking about?
Stockholm syndrome, absolutely. That's another, you know, an effect of gaslighting in a way. I mean, and Patty Hearst went through it as well, if you're familiar with the case of Patty Hearst in 1974 when she was kidnapped by the Symbionese Liberation Army in Los Angeles. Oh, actually, it happened in Berkeley, and then they moved down to Los Angeles, but she was held captive by them, and, you know, she was the newspaper heiress, you know, to the Hearst fortune. You know, all it took was 6 weeks of this intense I don't know what you call it, kind of a Maoist sort of conditioning, Maoist, you know, kind of breaking down of her while she was basically literally held captive in a closet. And after 6 weeks, she came out with her new persona, her new identity as Tanya, and she disowned on the radio, disowned her family, and you know, even when she was able to get away after that big fire that happened, and most of them were killed, she still went off with the two others that got away. Even when she was able, she could have walked away, but as she told Larry King in 2002 when she was interviewed, she had no free will. It took a couple of weeks of basically deprogramming to get her out of it. Now, I'm going off on a tangent here, but I think it illustrates the effects of what I also call mind hacking. You know, how people can be persuaded to, or almost like hypnotized into carrying out acts that are against their own self-interest.
Stella,
or, you know, otherwise thinking that they are crazy if they, you know, if they don't go along with that persona.
Yeah, Stella, let's take a break. And when we come back, let's come back to what's been happening. And we'll say this past 8 years, it's not the first time. But I remember last time we spoke, you told me over 100 psychologists were employed by the Obama administration, by the political campaign. There are psychological things going on that have been worked on the American people. They've been very effective. And some people are saying it was gaslighting. Let's take a break. When we come back, Stella Morabito is my guest, and we'll talk about that. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
I've just noticed something. If you put put it right when I'm not looking, I will say no more about it.
What's the matter? I don't understand. Paul, don't turn your back on me.
Look on the wall behind you.
Picture, it's gone again.
Yes. Where have you hidden it this time?
I didn't take it. Why should I take it? It's no use to me.
Why should you take other things? Pencils, knives.
Hold on.
Bella, where's the picture?
I didn't take it. I swear I didn't.
Come. Get the picture.
I'd know if I touched it. I'd remember. I've been better lately. You've missed nothing for days. For 2 weeks I've been well. I've had no headaches, no dreams. Why should I take the...
So you did know where it was.
I promise you I didn't. I only supposed it was here because it was found here twice before.
Why do you persist in lying to me, Bella?
The truth.
Bella, if you're not lying, there's only one alternative. You're losing your wits.
You promised you'd never say that to me again.
No control, even of your hands. You'd better go to your room.
No, no, not my room. I can't bear to be alone. Oh, God, help me.
God help you indeed.
All right, so that's from the movie, an excerpt. That was Charles Boyer and Ingrid Bergman, the 1944 film called Gaslight. And my guest is Stella Morabito, who's an expert on the mind games played by the left. And the point that we are going to make is that you have been played with. Some would say, and I'm one of them, that this past 8 years you have had your head played with so thoroughly that many of you thought you were going out of your mind. I'm going to just share a piece before I go back to Stella here. This, just this week, was in Politico, written by Michael Grunewald, and it said, everything is still awesome. The economy grew at a solid 3.5% clip in the third quarter and is now significantly larger than it was before the Great Recession. The jobless rate is down to 4.6%, which almost qualifies as full employment. The stock market and high school graduation rate are at all-time highs, while the uninsured rate, abortion rate, teen pregnancy are at all-time lows. Oil imports, crime, and healthcare inflation are also at near historic lows, with carbon emissions, foreclosures, and illegal immigration falling, too. Should I just stop and say that that is all a series of lies? But this is the kind of news, the fake news, the lies, the stuff you've been watching on TV, the stuff you've been seeing out of Hollywood that has made you think that you are actually going crazy, but you are not. And Stella Morabito is with me. Stella, you told me the last time we did a long-form interview that the Obama campaign had hired at least 100 social psychologists to operate in the campaign. Can you explain what that was all about?
Well, I think it was really an interesting contrast. If you look at both the 2008 campaign and 2012 campaigns, Obama's staff was filled to the gills with social psychologists. And if you look at social psychologists in terms of their political leanings, there are very, very few who you might call conservative. I mean, it's like 99% of them are to the left politically. And so it's not just that his campaign staff was filled with social psychologists who understood how to tweak human behavior and to create, kind of a slick marketing way to, you know, suck in supporters and create this, this mass following. But another interesting piece is that the Obama White House started something called a behavioral insights team. And again, you know, it's the same kind of stuff, you know, understanding human interactions and behaviors in order to control them. I mean, this is all part of like the Cass Sunstein, if you're familiar with him, he wrote a book called Nudge, which was all about basically pretty bald-faced, you know, how to control people. Anyway, so I just think it's interesting that what the left has put together and what they understand is the art of persuasion, so much more so than anyone, you know, conservative. I mean, we tend to be more focused on reason and arguments and logic, whereas the other side is really about manipulating conditioned emotional reflexes. You know, first trying to get people to reflexively react based on their emotions to an image or whatever their policy agenda is, and you know that of course is more compelling to most people who aren't tuned in as much to reason and logic.
Stella, where do you think, if you had to just off the top of your head give examples of where you think they've had the greatest success in making people try to believe lies, make them think that they're crazy on certain issues? Where do you think they've had their greatest success? Meaning the left.
In education. I mean, I don't know. I hate to call it success because it's so damaging. But where they've made the most inroads is through education. I mean, if you go to university campus, and of course K-12, it's all sewn into K-12. But now, of course, they want to start instructing preschoolers as well, in all of the fine points of the social policies that they want to put forward. What we call education today is, again, I have to go back to that word conditioning, almost Pavlovian-type conditioning, where emotions tend to hold greater sway than, anything that would help people, especially children, approach objective truth, objective reality. And after years of that, and you see what's happening on so many college campuses now, with the snowflake generation or whatever.
The safe spaces. They can't stand the truth. They think if you speak the truth, you're somehow abusing them. I mean, it's amazing. It's like I can't even find the words. It has just reproduced a generation that cannot think. And they think they know, but all they know is what to think about certain things. They don't know how to reason. And they don't know information.
Right. Yeah, and that is where radical education reform has made the most inroads, is blunting the capacity to think independently, to think clearly. I don't even like to use the word critically, because that's a word that they use, and it means a lot of different things in their context. I like to use the terms clear thinking, independent thinking. That is what has atrophied over a generation or two, actually, of radical education reform. And that's how you control people, is by preventing them from thinking independently. And to prevent them from thinking independently, you have to kind of put people into a sense of isolation, or at least threaten isolation if they do think independently. And that's what political correctness is set up to do.
Oh, let's stop there. Wait, hold on a second. Just go back and say that again. So, in other words, if people express a viewpoint that's counter to what they think they're supposed to be thinking, or that everybody else is thinking, they fear punishment. They fear
punishment, social isolation. Which, of course, if you look at how prisoners have viewed punishment, solitary confinement is considered the most devastating, because when you are cut off from other human beings, and in fact, feeling dehumanized, you go crazy. And so even from infancy, we have an instinctive, I call it primal, a primal sense of, it's like a survival mechanism that's hardwired into us to avoid social isolation, because it really is devastating. I mean, infants who are deprived of a sense of being loved or cuddled, end up with called failure to thrive, can end up with, failure to thrive that can lead to death, even, which they've seen in orphanages where babies can be, you can feed them and keep them dry and do everything, meet all of their physical needs. But if they don't feel connected with another human being, they fail to thrive. And so all I'm trying to say there is that this is kind of hardwired into us from infancy, and something that social psychologists who may not have the best of intentions can manipulate in people to get them to go along with a program or an agenda. I mean, the cult leaders do it with great success, if you want to use that word. If you look at the cult, the Jonestown cult, I don't know how many of your listeners are familiar with the case in 1978, the People's Temple. This cult leader, his name was Jim Jones, took everybody out to the jungles of Guyana, and there you go again, it's isolation. He isolated all of his followers there, and when they were going to be investigated by Congress, a congressman was killed, and then when it was clear that everybody was moving in on them, they were all ordered to drink the Kool-Aid. This is where we get the term Kool-Aid, the cyanide-laced Kool-Aid, and not over 900 people went ahead and zombie-like, went ahead and drank the Kool-Aid, and it was the worst case of mass suicide in history.
You know,
mass
Stella,
murder-suicide, really.
Yeah, interesting, little sidebar. One of my dear friends is a Pulitzer Prize-nominated photographer. He was with the Chicago Tribune. He did all the overseas third world, just very unusual stuff, and he was the photographer who captured that scene from the air of all those bodies lying on the ground after that mass suicide. So he was one of the first people on the ground there. But yes, and so that's a case where he persuaded everyone that there was an alternate reality. And when he thought that they were going to start seeing reality, he ordered them to kill themselves. But let's make this a little more practical. Mm-hmm. I've made a pretty strong accusation. I've said that we as American people have been gaslighted, sort of treated like made into some sort of a cult, at least the beginnings of it. Is that a legitimate accusation or is that an exaggeration?
What, to say that it's like the cult?
To say that we, this last 8 years, with all the barrage of information that we've had and misinformation and fake news, that we have almost been taken to the cliff in terms of creating an alternate universe and an alternate reality.
I think it's important that we actually recognize that. I think that if we don't even consider that possibility, then we continue to march toward the Kool-Aid. No, absolutely. We have to look at this for what it is. And yeah, I mean, over and over and over again, how many times, 50 times did Obama say, if you like your plan, you can keep it? And then he acted as though he never said any such thing. And then we're supposed to believe that what happened in Benghazi was the result of some guy's video and it wasn't a terrorist attack. And we're supposed to be, we're definitely being gaslighted in all of those cases. And when you've got the media colluding with, the politicians who are pushing this kind of stuff, it's a pretty bad formula. It's pretty deadly. And, I would have one other thing to say in terms of going forward, and that is when you look at the way these kinds of things, the way a gaslighter operates, say, one-on-one, the way a cult leader operates, toward their recruits, just the way psychological manipulation works, when the perpetrators are just, trying to consolidate their power. Their number one rule of thumb, always, is to make sure that people are unaware that they are being manipulated. Because once the awareness sinks in, then the game is up. So, that, and in fact, the expert on cults, Margaret Thaler Singer, who wrote an incredible book called Cults in Our Midst back in 1990s, She made that a number one in all of her talks, in her book and everything. Number one, when you're dealing with issues of coercive persuasion, that's what she called it, coercive persuasion, the perpetrator's number one rule is make sure that your recruit is not aware that they're being manipulated. So,
no. And so we have it.
Awareness is extremely important in going forward in helping people understand the techniques, the methods of coercive persuasion, so
my
that they can understand.
That's great. Stella Morabito was my guest, and you can see why I invited her to have this discussion. So we're going to take a break. And Stella, when we come back, I want to play a different example. Just to give another example, I think, of how we have been gaslighted, and it continues. Another totally different group of people having great success with this. So I'll just tease you with that. We'll come back in just a second. This is Sandy Rios in the Morning on AFR Talk.
Thank you.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. We are making the case, Stella Morabito and I, that in some form or fashion, the American people have been gaslighted this past 8 years, meaning they have been living in like an alternate universe, and they thought they were going crazy because the news, the media, the president, all the propaganda were out front telling us things that we knew were not true. And yet we didn't quite know how to cope. We thought maybe we were losing our minds, but we were not. I want to give you another example of that. Ami Horowitz, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, actually before Christmas. Ami Horowitz went on the streets of Sweden, and he reported on the outbreak of rapes and sexual assaults against women since the influx of all these Muslim immigrants. Let's listen first to just his report.
Sweden, home to hot blondes, dead Vikings, and the Swedish chef. Now, add another thing to this list. Sweden is now the proud owner of the title, the rape capital of Europe. Sweden has always had a reputation of being a harmonious and liberal society. This image has been shattered as rape has skyrocketed over the past 5 years. At the same time, Sweden has been going through a revolutionary demographic shift that has seen the country take in more refugees from Islamic countries than any Western nation in the world. This immigration has led to culture clashes and to enclaves of self-contained societies across Sweden. This is Annika Henroth Rostein. She's a Swedish journalist who has extensively covered the Middle Eastern migration into Sweden.
What we have is, first of all, a Swedish culture. Then we bring in, like last year, 190,000 people that come from a very different culture, a culture that isn't liberal, that has radically different views on women, on sexuality, on gender, on all of these things. There's an explosion.
All right, so that is the first part of the video by Ami Horowitz. And then he goes on, he interviews some policemen, he talks about the brutal rapes, he shows a police station. It's unbelievable. But here's the really most unbelievable thing. You just heard them say that Sweden has taken more Muslim immigrants into its little tiny country than any European Union country. All right? And it's a correlation timeline with this immigration and these rapes. And yet Ami Horowitz goes out on the streets and he interviews about probably five people. I think it's about five people. Let's listen. Do you think maybe they're going to say, oh, it's we need to control the refugees. We need to vet them. We need to do something. We need to make them Western. We need to teach. No, that's not what they say. Let's listen.
Do you think the sexual assault problem is an Islamic problem or
no,
not really?
No. I think it's a gender problem among men.
Yeah, the problem isn't like this culture or that culture. The problem is male culture.
I don't think the immigrants is the problem.
No, it's not. Like, that's just like a tiny bit of the problem. And like,
when that happens, like, it's because we didn't, like, bring them in the right way.
And I don't see that connection at all. And I would very much like to see the evidence of such a connection.
Do you think it's almost racist to make that connection?
Yes, I think so.
Is there a point where you think that Sweden's done too much to bring people in, or do you think there's...
No, there is no too much in helping people.
And is there a limit, do you think, to how many immigrants Sweden can take?
No, no.
All right, so that's a portion of that video. We put it on our Facebook page a few weeks ago. Let me just say, they said that, no, it's not the immigrants, it's just male culture. It's, we just didn't bring them in the right way. You know, it's amazing. So Stella Morabito, my guest, what's going on there? What does it happen when intelligent people, obviously well-spoken, probably pretty decent IQs, see before their very eyes an epidemic of rape and a correlation between Islamic immigration and young men coming into their culture, and they absolutely, even angrily, deny there's a connection? What's going on?
Oh, my goodness. You know what? It has me thinking Stockholm Syndrome has returned to Stockholm in the biggest way. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's another reason to call it Stockholm Syndrome, which, of course, goes back to 1974 bank robbery in Stockholm. But it really is astonishing. It's this, you know, Stockholm Syndrome, for your listeners who want a quick definition, would be when a captor identifies with his when the captive sympathizes with the captor, and it's an interesting psychological phenomenon. But I think you can kind of boil it down to the effects of definitely a gaslighting effect. Political correctness, I would call it like a major gaslighting regime, because what political correctness does is try to alter your perception of reality, try to punish you for speaking what you believe, and punish you through social isolation. And in those women, when you heard those women apologize for the rapist, what you were really hearing, I think, is this sense of, I mean, they would deny it, but I believe that there's a sense of fear of being smeared, because political correctness works so well because of the threat of the smear being the social isolation and being cut off socially. And so they, you know, they adopt this persona, which, you know, you can see in a lot of universities now, too, where they say what they've been programmed to say, and their independent thought, their capacity to look clearly at what has happened and think independently and not fear expressing independently based on, you know, what they see, I mean, the statistics or whatever else before their very eyes, that social conformity just has reached a peak. Seems to. Hopefully, it won't get much worse. But
Stella, you know, I was thinking Germany is. It must be. Well, I will say, I don't know proportionately, but they are as bad. Angela Merkel has done a number on her people in terms of speaking lies to them, and you know, they're having a bit of a rebellion in Germany because some people are not buying her propaganda, and they're not, and so it actually is becoming dangerous. I just read that Mein Kampf is becoming the most popular book in Germany again.
Well, you know, I don't know what that's about, but what I can say is that, you know, when you look at how those who are concerned about the state of disarray, the state of chaos, the crime waves, and everything else that's coming in, are being smeared. I mean, they're being called the far right, you know, like skinhead, white supremacy, or whatever. It's a typical smear that comes from the political left when anybody interferes with their narrative.
Like Geert Wilders in the Netherlands, who's just been, they've tried to destroy him because he's tried to speak out about the dangers of Islamic immigration. Of course, we have it, Stella, we have it on some level here, too. We've got the Muslim Brotherhood led by their mouthpiece, CARE, who had the Bush administration's ear, and then, you know, has a front row seat with the Obama, and some might say, are steering the wheel at the Obama administration. And we're being told, you know, Islam is a peaceful religion. We're told all kinds of things that we are demanded. If we don't say that, if we don't parrot it, if we don't believe it, we are Islamophobic. You know, we are
right.
We are sick people if we don't use our own minds to evaluate what we really see as truth.
Right, and you listen in that dialogue from the movie Gaslight, the utter contempt with which the husband spoke to his wife when she would express what was real, what she saw. You know, it's the same dynamic. Even if, you know, you say, oh, well, you know, it's just a one-on-one, the dynamic there is the same. And, you know, I think it's really, really important going forward that the American people get an education on how coercive persuasion works, because it is so seductive. I mean, the fear of being cut off from others is it's a terror, really, that's pretty universal among human beings. And so it can be easily manipulated. And we need to understand that we are not, I know I'm not immune, nobody's immune to it. And it's very, very powerful, and we need to combat it. And if you just indulge me for a moment, I'm going to go back to that DIMPAC report I think I spoke to you about in a previous interview. I mentioned Margaret Thaler Singer, who wrote a book called Cults in Our Midst. And she was, along with Robert J. Lifton, not with him. They both debriefed or deprogrammed Patty Hearst. But Margaret Thaler Singer actually was asked by the American Psychological Association to head up a task force on how coercive persuasion works so that the American public could be better informed and more immune to these kinds of manipulations. Well, she did that. She did a great job. She wrote up something called, a report. DIMPAC stands for Direct and Indirect Methods of Persuasion and Control. And it's really fascinating when you look. She was tasked to do that because of all of the cult activity, because of the horrific tragedy at Jonestown in 1978. After all the cult activity of the 70s, starting with Patty Hearst, the Stockholm Syndrome, after that bank robbery, all of that kind of coercive persuasion. People were, the American Psychological Association at the time felt that there was a need for that public awareness. Well, Margaret Thaler Singer came up with a report, and 1986, it was about to be released, and outside, quote, experts basically said that there really is no such thing as brainwashing, that this is all a crock. Margaret Thaler Singer ended up having to go to court and sue because of defamation of character, and the American Psychological Association put total kibosh on that report that was supposed to help Americans keep their minds free. And they basically said that is not to have the imprimatur of the APA, and that report is never to go out. So you can find it in some places on the Internet, partially or whatever. I have a link to it in that Mass Delusion piece I wrote. But in any event, I think it's really important that we understand that 30 years ago, there was somebody who was really on the case. There was a task force on the case helping Americans to understand how coercive persuasion works. And that all fell by the wayside. So we need to resurrect something like that.
Absolutely, and we're doing our little part here. Let me just say, we'll put that article again on our Facebook page that you wrote, Mass Delusion, because it was so good. And we'll put that so people can read it. And Stella, in the remaining moments, and it just is a couple of minutes here, I think probably the thing that people are experiencing with President-elect Donald Trump is something probably deeper than they even recognize. More, not about him, specifically, as much it is a freedom, a bondage-breaking experience to hear people just say what they think, even if it's not right. You know, just to hear, just to express, free expression. I just think the chain has been broken. Would you agree?
Oh, yes. And when Donald Trump made the point that there's too much political correctness, or he's sick of the political correctness, that really struck a chord. It was as though in the movie Gaslight, the police detective had said, you're not imagining this. This is really what's happening. I mean, it's yes, as you said, it's very liberating to hear that, you know, you're not crazy. These things are happening. People are trying to prevent you from saying what you really believe.
Yes, if we had time, we would play the ending of that movie because Ingrid Bergman in the end says, I'm not crazy. I'm not losing my mind. And I think that kind of captures the way we're all feeling. It is, again, much greater than a person. It's kind of the liberation of the mind. What a fascinating thought and an interesting discussion, Stella Morabito. I appreciate your time today and your expertise on all these mind-boggling issues that we need to be aware about. So thanks so much.
Well, thank you, Sandy. Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Sandy Rios with you in the morning on AFR Talk.